Off the Ball.
In association with Air. Watch every UEFA Champions League and Europa League game on the Air Sport Pack.
This is News Talk.
Yes, it is Friday night. Off the Ball. Dave McIntyre with you for the evening. Delighted to say we're joined by Brian O'Driscoll and Nathan Murphy in studio. A lot to get through over the next couple of hours. We've got Keane Healy, Ray Boom Boom Mancini and that brilliant piece that he did with Joe during the week. Friday Night Racing, of course, with Don and John, and a lot of rugby to get through. Evening, lads. How are you, Brian?
Good evening. How are you?
Nathan?
How are you?
Our colleague here doesn't sound like he's in the best of health.
Whew, I'll tell you what. We've all been in this position.
Either the kids have kept him up all night.
Could you not have worked from home?
I don't usually take two sugars in my coffee.
I'll just take a cold today,
I
lads.
That, yeah.
Well, look,
I'm just something coming on. I picked up something from my own fella.
It's that time of the year.
Yeah.
It was very
going
good
around,
of you to.
Around, in all the schools.
Mm.
You've peeled yourself from your deathbed.
I had to
and
come
you've
back
somehow
from London.
Made
yeah.
your way in.
I miraculously made my flight.
You were at a very prestigious event last night.
Yeah, it was great. It was the inaugural Rugby Centurions dinner and launch of the concept of Rugby Centurions. Everyone, obviously, 100 test matches, men and women. I think there's 54 of us. And it was the brainchild of Gavin, his surname escapes me, but John Schmidt, South African captain, was the one that pushed this, going back 2.5-3 years. And eventually it launched yesterday, and it was a pretty great event, you know, being in the same room as some impressive players, men and women. Richie McCall was there, Raj, John de Villiers, Victor Matfield, Nathan Sharp, you know, flew from Australia for it. So
just for a knees up.
Yeah, it was a great effort. And he gave it a belt last night.
You had to make it worth
it. I'm almost sure that I left him.
Before we came on air, you mentioned Philippe Sella. Would he be the oldest of the 54?
He is. He's the first Centurion, right. Yeah. I think he's 111. But that's like 180 in the modern day caps, you know. Getting them through the 80s. When was he? 82, I think he said. He got 82 or 83.
First cap.
Yeah. And
then
finished in 95.
He would have played the 95 World Cup, wouldn't he?
Yeah, yeah. So, like, absolute hero. He was, for me, the best 13 there's ever been. Certainly, any of the ones that I would have seen televised or footage of them, but he was a bit of a genius. So to have that longevity at that time when the French were a real force to be reckoned with, far more so than they are these days. So yeah, it was great to be in that company.
And he's looked after himself.
He is like a butcher's dog. He is, honestly, he is shredded. He said he's doing a half marathon on Sunday. Down in San Sebastian with all his mates, and then he was like, and then I'm going to eat and drink. I was like, you're entitled to after a half marathon.
So he's not talking with the gravelly voice this morning?
Probably not to the same degree, but
do the Lions test caps count? Like if you're a 97,
so Jamie,
and you play three test matches for the Lions, do you get in?
Jamie Heaslip, 95 and 5, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Just about.
Yeah. Well, he's not done yet. So he'll certainly say that to you anyway.
So this will be an annual thing. It's like the Champions Dinner on the Tuesday night of the Masters.
That's it. Just that's the exactly latest. What we're looking for. Yeah. We actually, all joking aside, we got jackets.
Oh,
they
really?
Yeah, they presented jackets to us up
what
on
colour?
The stage. Black, navy, not fully sure.
Okay.
Yeah, so nice.
Custom fitted.
Fitted well, yeah, fitted well. So
maybe the newest incumbent could choose
the menu
for the night.
Yeah. And we presented to the next person. It was pretty, yeah, it was very, a bit of a rip-off now that I think about it, of the Masters. So, yeah, I presented to Chris Patterson.
Who presented to you?
Donna Kennedy. I think, were there 30 of us or somewhere close, which I thought was a great turnout, all things considered. Because
30
there's lots
of the 54.
There's lots still playing.
Yeah.
You know, like
Parise, for example,
Parise,
was
exactly.
playing this weekend.
Yeah. Alan Wynne-Jones, amongst others. And then obviously there was, you know, there's the Kiwis, the likes of Mills Mullina and Kevin Mielamu and those boys. They didn't have the same effort that Nathan Sharp had.
Shame on them.
Travel up for 48
hours.
Like
if next year's event is in Auckland, are you going?
Absolutely. Let it be said that I am in for that.
You got it. Yeah. Well, you've got somewhere to stay.
Yeah, I'm going to. Myself, yeah, Kevin.
Bunkin Raj.
Kevin,
no, Raj.
No,
oh, Kevin.
Yeah, yeah, Kevin said he hooked me up, yeah.
Yeah.
Raji, actually, yeah, down to Christchurch with him, yeah.
Sounds like a great session. Speaking of which,
mm-hmm.
There's going to be another one coming up pretty shortly, and our Off the Ball listeners really need to keep their ears peeled. We'll give you all the details, specifically in detail, on Monday, but it is our very special pre-Christmas Off the Ball Roadshow. It's going to be an intimate affair. Jer is going to be there alongside Brian and a massive figure in British and Irish rugby. We will reveal all on Monday. I've just learned who it is, and already
I'm excited.
I'm on the edge of my seat. I can't wait.
It's going to be good.
It is going to be very good. As good as it could ever be. It's the latest Off the Ball Roadshow, thanks to HeinekenRugbyClub.com, where fans get more out of the game. Right.
Just thinking, Dave, is the best use of my time over the next half an hour, 40 minutes, maybe just being the translator? So if Brian just wants to write down what he's thinking, and then I can be your voice and
I've
just save you.
I've lost the power of writing too. I can barely speak, but I've definitely lost the power of writing. Yeah,
he's gripping the chairs of his, the armrest of his seat just to
go
stop
easy,
his hand
go
shaking.
Easy. Let's keep it nice and simple.
Yeah, well, look, we'll do our best. You brought up Rog there. I know yourself and Nathan touched on it last week when you spoke on Friday evening, but the move has been confirmed. And look, it's an amazing move for him. You have to hand it to him for his ambition and the amount of experience he's going to get from this. He's clearly thinking long term, thinking big picture. But I'm looking at it from a selfish point of view, the way that I might approach it, thinking financially, this cannot make sense.
No,
for
it can't.
I mean, you compare the money in the Premiership and the top 14 to what's going on in Super Rugby, there's a reason there's an unbelievable talent drain from the three Southern Hemisphere countries.
And to that point, I think he is thinking big picture. I haven't had an opportunity to pull it apart with him yet. I spoke to him pretty briefly last night. We caught up, but it was in the middle of the dinner, and then he is doing his coaching badges over the course of the next 2 or 3 days and needed to study, so he had an early night. He didn't get caught up with in the bad company. So I haven't had that proper chance to understand what the rationale was. You have to think, it's obviously developing his skill base, a completely new environment, very forward-thinking team down in the Crusaders. Scott Robertson is an impressive young coach. And I think you'd have to imagine that it's not financially worth his while to do it, but he's thinking an investment of a year or two and come back with way more knowledge to be able to find himself into a new head coach role in Europe somewhere. I wonder, will it be Munster immediately or will he do something else before he comes back?
Well, he pretty much laid out his medium-term future in the Examiner today, didn't he?
Yeah, so he's going to go over there for a couple of years, then take a year out, it seems, return to Paris because he wants the kids are essentially French at this stage, they'll have another year in school over there, and then he'll take the next step, whether that is coming back to Ireland or, again, whether he takes on another coaching job. Like, clearly, he always had a fierce desire to win. When you look at him and when you were a teammate of his, did you always see that desire to learn as well?
Yeah, he did. He did. He's a good listener. He's a good listener. And I think that one of his real skills is that he doesn't think he knows it all. He's willing to listen to other people, and he'll argue points, and he's someone that definitely backs himself and backs the way he sees the game. But if he gets an alternative option, he'll listen to it. I think the week that he spent with Ireland during the summer served him incredibly well. I think that reignited his passion for coaching. I think he was unsure whether this was going to be what he wanted to do.
He's constantly referring to the time that he spent with Ireland in the summer.
Yeah, and listen, I think anyone that spends time with Joe and sees the way he goes about his business can only have a positive impact on people. You see it with Andy Farrell, with all the other coaches, Simon Easterby, and it's undoubtedly had a positive impact on Rog because he's gone away and thought, right, this is what I want to do in the future. I want to be a head coach. I don't want to be a skills and defence coach. I want to be a head coach, and I've got to go and learn my trade in as many arenas as I can. I think that's really clever in what he's doing, and he's getting great kudos for it too, going down. And it is nice seeing the cycle being broken that we just take Kiwi coaches and that they're actually getting us. But it does speak volumes for what he's obviously done in Racing too, that be sure that they've spoken to Dan Carter about what he offers.
Yeah, well, judging from his piece today, Dan Carter seems to have been the catalyst for this entire move. It was just an offhand conversation that O'Gara was having with Carter. Carter then came back and told him that he had recommended him for this job with the Crusaders and that he should probably talk to them. And I was just wondering, what does Jackie Lawrence-Eddy and the two coaches at Racing think of this? That, like, one of their players, their standout player, is involved in the background in one of their best coaches being poached by his former club.
I think you'll find Dan Carter won't be getting a second contract. Yeah, I don't know if Dan Carter would have been doing that in year one. Yeah. But he's, I think it's, you know, one of the best players of all time, to give you that credibility. And you know, he's gone out on a limb too, Carter, you know, like when you, it's like offering a builder that you've used to someone else. It's sort of, it can be thankless, you know, because you just get the hassle aspect rather than the positive impact from someone working out. So for him to do that, he really must back him and feel that he'll do a great job for them.
Yeah.
It's probably also quite damning, is it, of the culture within Racing that maybe the conversations the two of them are having are, listen, there's another way. There is another way of coaching. There's another way of learning.
They've both come from very, very different environments. And that's what I, you know, constantly get back, is that the way they do things in France is so vastly different than in Ireland, and by the sounds of things, definitely in New Zealand too. And you have to adapt to that, and you have to have a flexibility. But, you know, maybe Roz just, you know, I suppose, had enough of that. He feels as though he's got enough of that French side of things to put into his portfolio, and now he needs to, you know, jigsaw another piece in, and that's the New Zealand piece.
Well, we'll see, and the very best of luck to him. He also detailed today the amount that he has to cram in between today and the time that he actually flies down to New Zealand for the first time. You mentioned he's trying to get his coaching badges boxed off. He obviously has to literally box off all of his belongings, get the family moved down.
I think they're going to stay put for the time being. I get that impression. You know, it's hard to have that upheaval. You know, he's got five kids too.
Yeah.
And an unbelievably understanding wife.
Think of the amount of sleep he's going to get.
Yeah.
He'll be on his own down there for a little while. Ireland-Argentina tomorrow is the last of the November internationals. We'll focus on our opponents tomorrow in a few minutes' time. But a lot of negativity over the performance against Fiji. And we had Keith Wood and Dunica O'Callaghan on Wednesday Night Rugby. They couldn't understand why there had been so much criticism. I mean, what did you make of it?
Yeah, listen, it wasn't a great performance by Ireland standards these days. That's the reality of it. And I think that's the barometer is quite high now. And the expectation is on second tier nations to put them away. I did think, and I saw Gerry Thornley during the week made reference to a 27-point spread, and I just thought that was the best. That's the best odds I've ever seen, because you got the sense that Fiji were always going to score a couple of tries. So did that Ireland team have 40 points in them? I didn't see it. You're looking at combinations, guys getting first caps.
Bunch of players that never played together.
You know, first game in Ireland. Like, there's rugby is about cohesion, and it's about understanding one another and telepathy and experience. And you grow on your experiences when you're putting a mishmash of players that have had a week's training together. The expectation shouldn't be as enormous as it appeared to have been. And yes, it was still not brilliant because there was, you know, unforced errors, but ultimately they got the job done. And it's funny, you know, listening to Joe talking about, I thought he was being pretty coy in advance. Any win would be acceptable. But in reality, he was right too. Mm. It was a very credible Fijian team. They'd have some big wins over the summer. You know, they'd won four of the last five, beating tier one nations in Scotland and Italy. So, you know, this is a talented group of players that have had a run of games together. And you have to sometimes go, right, we got the job done, we did win, and we had to grind it out, which I think there's huge positives to be taken in that as well. They let them back into the game, but they still got the job done.
There seemed to be almost an arrogance within the stadium with Ireland and an attitude towards Fiji, a condescending attitude, a patronising attitude when they got the try just before halftime, almost a round of applause of, well done, lads, you're making a game of it. And also seemingly a kind of a lack of understanding of depth, that Stuart McCluskey and Chris Farrell in the centre are options, but they're not Robbie Henshaw and Bundy Aki. They're not of the same quality. They don't have the same level of understanding. They can do a job, but they're not first choice players.
No, they're not. I think they can probably do more than a job. I haven't been a Stuart McCluskey detractor, but I probably haven't seen what every Ulster fan has seen over the last two seasons, and I was impressed with what he did. I'm really glad to see Farrell getting another opportunity. I think the game wasn't for him last week. It didn't really run his way. He had to carry into some pretty heavy traffic, and there's some big boys in that Fijian backline too. So I'm glad he gets another chance with more first selection
in a first choice backline.
Where he'll hopefully, you know, besides playing to the structures, he'll get an opportunity to play a little bit more with ball in hand and show more of his skill set. Because I don't think we got a proper reflection of the quality player that he is. I think he is a very good player. He'll be a solid international, maybe not outstanding, maybe not a Robbie Henshaw or a Bundiaki or a Gary Ringrose, but certainly a good quality international.
He's the only one of the 15 that started against Fiji that's retained. So he's alongside Bundiaki in the centre. He's an even bigger version of Robbie Henshaw. And when you look at the back line, like, it is the biggest back line that Joe Schmidt has ever picked since he became Ireland coach. And I looked back at the back line that you played in your last international in Paris. The outside backs, obviously the halfbacks as they were and as they are tomorrow, but the two Carneys, Trimble, yourself and Gordon in the middle. Not a tiny back line, but
Fergus McFadden off the bench.
Yes.
Yeah.
Significantly smaller than the one that we're going to see against Argentina tomorrow. Is that a pattern that Joe Schmidt is following? Is it by design, or is it just that the guys who are playing their way into form in the opening few weeks of the season just happen to be these monsters? Throw Adam Byrne in as well into the mix. Like, it's an enormous back line outside Sexton and Conor Murray.
I think the days of, you know, players, certainly centres the size of Gordon and myself, are behind us. You know, it is becoming a bigger man's game, undoubtedly. Even Gary Ringrose is, you know, kind of wiry, is still, you know, 6'1", 6'2", nearly. So he's substantial. So I don't think it's by design. I think he is picking on foreign players. And I think, did I read today, it's Joe Schmidt's Adam Byrne is his 46th first cap, which is remarkable over a, you know,
four-year
period. Mm. But I think a lot of it is, yes, you do have to carry well. You've got to carry because there's a lot of setup plays. So you're going to be carrying in traffic a bit. That's part of Joe Schmidt's remit, and also being good in the air. But you look at Andrew Conway, who's no giant, and very effective Keith Earls is no giant. So those players, if you're picking from a full deck, are those two in the 23 and maybe, you know, starting players, probably. So Adam Byrne is getting his opportunity, but the reality is he's not going to be a first choice player.
But given the collective size of these guys, does it change in any way the way that we'll play?
No, it doesn't. In Joe Schmidt's teams, you have to have the scope of fitting in and to what's gone, you know, the previous Six Nations, and they built on that, and then a summer tour, and now the November internationals. Irrespective of who you are, what your name is, how many caps you have, you're just plugging into a system. And they'll have looked at Argentina in massive depth, and they'll have pulled apart. We'll see aspects of what Leinster did a few years ago and what Ireland have done in recent years, and he'll have tweaked one or two things because he sees an opportunity against a defensive system that Argentina operates. So we don't know that until we see it, but Joe Schmidt is so detailed in what he does that we'll see minor variations on baseline plays that he's been operating for years.
Is there not a big opportunity here for Adam Byrne when you look at the wingers? It seems as though we have a changing in the guard. Obviously, Zeebo's not going to be involved. Trimble and Bow, we seem as though we've moved past that. Earls has his injury problems at the moment, that there could actually be a space, even looking as soon as this coming Six Nations, certainly for a place in the 23.
Yeah, I think wing is one of the spots that's absolutely open. Keith Earls has shown great form this year and is very unfortunate, but he's your number one starter. Jacob Stockdale did brilliantly against South Africa. So you'd have to imagine, you know, he's one of the guys in possession now. But absolutely, I think you look at other positions and we've a lot more strength in depth. I think winger is, we're going through that slight transition where Tommy Bowe is in the winter of his career, likewise Andrew Trimble. And to have yeah, we need big firepower. We need guys that are able to score tries and finish tries. And Adam Byrne has shown that in his years playing for Leinster, that he knows where the try line is and he can get the job done. It's, I just hope that, you know, the basics of his game, which he's worked really hard on, because I think he's a great athlete and he's become a good rugby player, but he just needs to do the simple things well. That's what Joe Schmidt looks for in all his players. He's not looking for massive X factor. He's just looking to fit into that system well and take those opportunities.
He did come to the game quite late, Adam Byrne, and then has obviously had a huge amount of injury problems. So he's probably played senior games, probably half a century of senior games. Like, is that the problem? Is there just a rawness there that he just needs more and more game time?
Yeah, like is he only 23? And Joe Schmidt played him as an 18-year-old, back in 2012. So it's, you know, he's still a young man, and he's very, very detailed in what he does himself. He's an excellent trainer, very good professional, looks after himself remarkably well. So I think it's he's very deserving of his opportunity. And yes, like all things, the guy in possession of the jersey, if you play well, it's very difficult for a coach to drop you, irrespective of who's coming back from injury. If you have reminded him that you did a brilliant job last time, you look back to Rob Kearney and the Soldier Field game, that memory is lingering in Joe Schmidt's mind, that one of the biggest games Ireland have ever played, his fullback was man of the match. And that's what's keeping him in the team when everyone else is talking about, we need Conway in, or we want Tiernan O'Halloran, or Zeebo should be there. That's actually, coaches go back to players that did a job for them, and so the guy, if Adam Byrne does a good job this weekend, you know, and he continues good form with Leinster over the Christmas period, you know, guy in possession.
I want to take a quick break in a moment, but just one question, take you out of your comfort zone a little. Looking at the pack, two really quick ones: Jack McGrath not on the matchday squad, Kilcoyne and Healy are ahead of him. I mean, he came off the bench in all three of the tests against New Zealand on the Lions tour. What's happened and what's gone on there?
I don't know. I think, yes, and players go through peaks and troughs, and I'm not privy to what goes on at training. Maybe he's just gotten a bit stale. Maybe you do see Lions tours impact some players negatively, some via injury, some lack of form. But it's also Cian Healy in great form, and I think it's said it before that it's good for team morale picking guys on form, and Kilcoyne, you know, getting back in there, he's had some brilliant showings for months of the season. So to keep your squad on side and feel as though the players on the periphery, if they know that they can improve their performances, that they have a chance of getting back in his team, that's great for competitiveness. And you can be sure that Jack McGrath's form will pick up now coming into the Six Nations over this next month, 6 weeks period, back to back Europe, and then Christmas period, and again Europe in January in advance of the Six Nations. He'll be better than he has been for the first couple of months of the season, for sure.
Yeah, and again, you go back to the depth thing. It's great that we have three loose heads that we'd be very happy to see starting a test match for Ireland. And even the news that Marty Moore is coming back to play for Ulster from next season onwards on the other side of the scrum, maybe he may well be breathing down the neck of Tadhg Furlong when we get into a World Cup year.
Yeah, and you know, Marty's the forgotten man. You know, he was on the bench, and having big impacts for those back-to-back Six Nations wins. It was a big move to go to Wasps. It hasn't worked out for him, but he's gotten himself out of his contract and he's gone back to Ulster. And he just needs to do? He needs to get back fit. I think he came back in bad condition from into pre-season this year, and as a result, I don't think Di Young picked him and was pretty annoyed with the shape that he was in. It took him a long time to get to match fitness, so he can't allow that. And particularly someone that is prone to keeping some size on or putting weight on, you've got to be more detailed with how you treat yourself, treat your holidays, you treat your downtime. So if he wants to get back into the Ireland plans, he just needs to look after that, and then just a consistency of performance in Ulster next year.
And it's great form. It shows the kind of the appetite, the ambition that he has to play for Ireland again, that we're always looking at these situations where players who are either out of contract or can't get into the team, they don't end up at Connacht or in Ulster or in Munster. And here we have Marty Moore wants to play for Ireland. He's going the right way about doing it.
Absolutely. And we don't want to, listen, we want We want four and five tight heads. We want four and five in every position, driving the standards, pushing to get in, because that's exactly what's happening in the Loosehead side. Dave Kilcoyne, through his performances, has nudged himself into the matchday squad. And it doesn't matter, you know, what experience a player has, you know, whether they were on the bench for the Lions during the summer or not. If you're in good form and you're in the shop window playing for one of the Irish provinces, you've given yourself way more of an opportunity to play in the national team.
Yeah, well, we've got some more prop forward goodness coming in the next hour of tonight's show, because we have a really interesting piece that with Keane Healy that you will hear after 8 o'clock. So stick around for that. We're going to focus a little more on Argentina, our opponents, tomorrow after the break.
Off the ball
on News Talk, in association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
Okay, welcome back. Brian O'Driscoll and Nathan Murphy still with us in studio, talking rugby, talking Argentina tomorrow. There's a reason I didn't tell you this guy was going to be talking to us as we opened the show, because we weren't sure we could get him. Felipe Contepomi is in a meeting, but you've taken the time to answer the phone, Felipe. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us. Good evening.
Yeah, good evening. How are you?
We won't keep you too long. We just wanted to get the Argentinian perspective ahead of this game tomorrow, Felipe. They have been quite keen to talk up how tired they are at the end of a really grueling season. And I just wonder, maybe to get your viewpoint on it, because you're close to a lot of these players, having coached them in Super Rugby this season. I mean, how exhausted are these players, given all the trips, all the games, a lot of them defeats, and the difficulties they've had to get through over the last 9 to 12 months?
Yeah, I think it's a reality, but at the same time, you know, it's what you get, what you have, you know. And I think they could be, or they are tired, but at the same time, they've been now, most of them with two years under their belly, under their belt with a Super Rugby, speed of game and experience. So it's about a balance, you know. They could be a bit tired because the season is really long, and they're some of them starting to get used to long seasons. But at the same time, they've got more experience on that scenery, you know?
The time that they have spent in Super Rugby, and as close as you've been to these players, how much of an improvement do you think it has made to them, both as club players, with the Jaguars in particular, and then feeding into the national side?
Well, Super Rugby is an intensity, I think, even higher than international rugby in terms of speed, you know, of the game. It actually, you play like 35 minutes in Super Rugby, and in an international game it's less than 30 of time, you know, of game time. So probably that's an advantage. The biggest question for me is to try to impose that intensity on an international level. Because if you go to the a speed of game that Ireland or in case when they played England are used to, in my opinion, Ireland is a much better team than Argentina nowadays, you know. So if you play at their pace the key is for the Argentinian team to accelerate. Even if they are tired, they need to know that they've been doing that for the whole year, so they are capable of doing it, and they need to try that from a stoppage to a starting set piece. They need to take it the least time possible, so that the rhythm of the game goes fast, you know.
Phil Dricko here. There's been lots of niggle in the past games between Ireland and Argentina. Obviously came from, you know, the World Cup defeat Ireland suffered in 99, and again in 2003, where we managed to nudge it by you in Australia. Does that still exist? Is there still a sense that Argentina, when they play against Ireland, you know, there's something more to the game?
Hi, Rico. How are you, mate?
I'm really good, thanks, Phil.
I think that those niggles are basically, or the way I see it, is because we are two teams that are very similar in the way we live rugby, or we live our national team, you know. And when you come two teams come against, two very passionate teams comes against, you'll always have those niggles. And for me, although I'm half Irish, but for me, we always admire the Irish team rather than having something that an eagle, you know. But when you go into a game against an Irish team, it's like a real a battle, because they are so proud of their team, the same as we are of our team, and it becomes those games that sometimes a bit of a bruise, but I think it's very positive to the game to watch those teams, those two teams, that they are so proud of them, of themselves, you know.
Felipe, before we let you go, how do you think this is going to go tomorrow?
To be honest, I think obviously if I think with my heart, I would love Argentina and I would say, well, we have a chance. But if I think with my head, Ireland are the favorite, and that's normal to say that. I think they're in a great moment, but at the same time, you always, as I said, you know, we've never won in Ireland, and there's always a first time, and we always dream with that first time of beating Ireland in Ireland. But if I have to put my money, I would say in Ireland. but obviously, I hope Argentina can win.
Okay, Felipe, thanks a million for fitting us in. Really appreciate it.
Okay, pleasure. Take care. Bye.
Former Argentinian fly half, Felipe Contepomi there. If he says Ireland are going to win, we should probably take that as read, because we all recall the night of that roadshow we had in the build-up to the quarter-final in 2015, and he told the entire Three Arena that they were going to beat us.
Yeah.
And we know what happened the following Saturday. I was looking at trying to find your last non-line summer tour. It was New Zealand in 2012, three tests, the last of which was that 16-0 beating. And that was at the end of a season which you played in the Heineken Cup final. Leinster already looked tired in the Pro 12 final the following week when Ospreys pipped you by a point. From your experience, how weary are these Argentinian players?
They have to be. Geographically, they're in the worst spot of any country in the world. 50 long-haul flights in any year. Anyone that's ever travelled knows that it's tiring travelling. I don't know what it is, but it knocks the stuffing out of you. So to do that many long-haul flights has to have an impact. And sometimes when you have one foot, on the sun lounger, and you can see the final post, you switch off a bit, but...
Do you think that happened at maybe in the second half, for example, in that game against New Zealand, where the game's already gone?
I think when they get away from you, and particularly against New Zealand, you have to start well against them. Yeah. So if you don't start well, it's like, oh no, when you're 25 down, it's like you're not coming back from 25 points down when you've never beaten them.
And you're going to be home by Monday.
So then you just want the time. Like, I remember looking at that clock. It was 38-0 and there was still, or 45-0, there was still 20 minutes to go. I just thought, I'd love the referee just to call it now. Like, there's nothing to be played for here. We can't get ourselves out of this rut and we're not going to win it. So it's damage limitation.
And you would feel a quick start from Ireland tomorrow might precipitate a similar feeling.
They're not of that attitude, really. You see that passion that they do play in their jersey, and their scramble defence is one of the most impressive in world rugby, and their ability to not give up. And I think that's what has gotten them into a couple of semi-finals in World Cups where we've lacked. You would think that they're not going to throw the towel in, but it's human nature when you can see the finish line, and if things don't go well for you initially, it's very hard to get yourself back up for it, considering the long year that they've had. So a good start for Ireland will go a long way to a good victory.
You mentioned the games maybe in the middle part of the last decade when there was quite a bit of niggle, quite a bit of nastiness. Alan Quinlan was on OTB AM earlier in the week talking about 04 and the nastiness in that.
There was a few nasty incidents in the game. Ledesma dropped a knee on Gary Longwell after a couple of minutes. He had to go off injured. a lot of late tackles.
And the great thing that we always hear about rugby is that the two teams put the violence on the pitch behind them and they go off and they have some drinks and they all realise that the game brings them together, right? That's what happens?
Yeah, we're all in Annabelle. It's about 2 o'clock in the morning and there's a standoff. There's literally a standoff and it's guys are taking off the jackets. We had the blazers on, we're taking off the jackets, rolling up the sleeves and saying, who's going to throw the first punch here? And it didn't happen, thankfully. But there was a nastiness and a narkiness there. And that continued on to 07 in the World Cup.
Are you in the front row when the jackets are about to come off?
I had an early night that night.
Were you there?
In spirit. I don't remember it. It doesn't jump out. So I must have been in another corner of Annabelle's.
Yeah. Could you imagine that kicking off in a nightclub?
Yeah. I tell you what, we had a dinner in the Shelburne and maybe it was 04. I thought it was later than that. And they were really getting stuck in. And there was always a vibe of uneasiness between the two of us because we'd had those close encounters, because they'd kicked us out of the World Cup in 99 and because we'd done likewise in 2003 and then them again in 2007. So I don't think that niggle exists. It's similarly to the Leinster-Munster thing, I think it was of a previous era.
Yeah.
Did they get into your heads? Like when you're thinking of games of that era, you're playing Scotland, you set up tactically and you know what to expect. With Argentina, there was something else coming.
Yeah, we were so nervous. I was so nervous in 2003. The thought of being kicked out 2 World Cups on the bounce. And that was that game. We still had an opportunity to beat Australia the following week if we didn't win that game. But we knew by beating Argentina, we'd be into the quarterfinals. Just we didn't know who we were going to get. It was one of the most nerve-wracking games. And that last 5 or 6 minutes, because it was only a couple of points and they took the lead and then Rog came on and kicked a few goals and got us back in front. So, all that crew, particularly with, Pichot as well and some of those real animals in their pack throughout that period too. There was lots of dirty stuff going on and it was probably of an era too where you could get away with it way more than you can these days.
Yeah.
I just get the sense that it doesn't, bad feeling doesn't quite exist.
No, there's
like
no real link to it,
and even Felipe's relationship with Rog, all of these things manifested in it being, quite confrontational. And
did you ever enjoy playing against them?
No, they're such a hard team to play against. You have to grind it out. Very hard to play very pure rugby against them. They're like a team of Alan Quinlan's. They're annoying to play against. You just want to get the result. Doesn't matter what your performance is like. You get a result against them, pack it up, right, job done. Next one.
A lot of talk about the spread before the Fiji game. Will we beat the spread tomorrow?
What is the spread tomorrow?
I don't know.
that's great. Let's talk around in circles for 5 minutes about what it might be. Say it's five.
What would you say
let's
say it's five.
I think the spread should be about
digits. I would have thought.
No. It'll be less than that. It'll be seven.
Well,
it'll
Nathan's seven. Frantically googling right now. So let's you and I just talk about it. How well you think we'll play and how much you think we might win by in the end, given that it's going to be a really tiring Argentina team in the last quarter in particular.
I think, the bookies rarely get it wrong. I think they got it wrong against Fiji, but I think Ireland will win tomorrow, but it'll be
15, I'm hearing.
15? I think I like Argentina at 15. I don't think we'll win by 15. I think, 7 or 8 points, a score, maybe a second score. But beyond that, Argentina aren't a capitulating side. Mm-hmm. Even against New Zealand, and New Zealand can rack scores up against you, in a heartbeat. They were in the lead in huge numbers of games at half time. So, it is last game of the season for them. It is the old leave nothing behind. I like Argentina if it's 15.
Yeah, 15.
I like that.
Okay. Listen, interesting as always. We'll chat to you again very soon. Thanks so much for coming in.
Cheers.
Off the ball on Newstalk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.